I was kind of in this weird love triangle with Roger, and I sort of just wrote this song as a joke for her one day, and then I played it for Jill, and she really liked it, and then she started telling me it should go on the album. I was like, I don't know about that. And I actually started liking it, and so I did put it on the album, and I played it on Letterman, and it's called Watching You Watch Him.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. Thanks for joining us. A little different this week. We have our first ever musical guest. We'll get to that in a minute, but just want to say thanks everyone for the various suggestions that keep coming. It's a little tough to get these going with players just because their schedules are so erratic. We were supposed to have a ATP player who actually kept winning, so that obviated our podcast this week. But we have a great guest in his stead. This is, I never know how to introduce this guy, but he's a friend of mine and a recording artist. We'll leave it at that, and we'll let him explain what it is he actually does. This is Eric Hutchinson. Stick around. We have a good conversation about tennis, about what it's like being an individual performer, about what it's like tennis players, to live your life on the road. And then we have a special treat at, I'm going to guess, at about the 30-minute mark. So let's do this live. In-person guest, Eric Hutchinson, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for, what do you make of our little podcast hub here?
It's nice, a cool hub.
Nice little pod.
I like it.
So it's a little unconventional. I think we need to set, you know what we need to do first?
Sure.
Tennis bona fides. If I told you Tommy Paul just beat Luca Pui, that actually means something to you.
I thought I was a huge Luca Pui fan for a minute. I like started following him on Instagram when the French Open that he like went really far?
Wimbledon.
It was Wimbledon.
Wimbledon 2016.
Yeah, I was I thought I was a huge fan. I was like, I'm on the cusp, he's gonna be great, and then I was like bored.
I wanna make the point. We didn't just pick our music guy out of the blue. You have strong feelings about it all comes back to tennis.
I'm a strong tennis fan. I grew up, I played a little bit of tennis when I was young. I was an Agassi guy. I dressed as Agassi, vintage 90s Agassi, for Halloween a few years
ago. I've seen that.
Ago.
But
yeah.
We may have to, Jamie, note to selves. I believe your wife may have sent me a photo of you dressed as Agassi.
I've got some. I think there's one on Instagram or something. I'll get you a photo.
There was some acid wash going on.
It was like vintage.
You player?
No, not really. I feel like it's one of those sports you got to put a lot of time in just to be bad at, you know?
It's true. It's one of the great, to me, that's one of the great sort of curses of tennis. You know, you play pool for a couple times, and all of a sudden you think you're ready to start hustling.
Right.
Tennis is a tough sport to pick up.
It'll eat you alive.
So I thought we'll save our big reveal for a little later, but okay. I thought actually you would have some insight onto some tennis-related topics, starting with the notion of touring. You make your living largely on the road. We always say in tennis there are no home games. Music,
right.
I guess.
But there's definitely home games.
If you're Celine Dion, you've got Vegas.
I feel there are certainly, for music, home game and away games. There's the home games are like, I'm the headliner. It's my crowd. The away games is, you know, when I opened for Kelly Clarkson a couple summers ago, and like, that's an away game, you know, like it's her crowd. We're doing our show, but like it's on her terms and her crowd. So like, you know, you're playing a little more.
I know you're thinking of a tennis analogy. You're Arena Falcone, who just happens to be on the big court against Serena Williams.
Exactly. But there's home games in tennis too, I feel like, though, because for the big players, you know, like this Federer win a few weeks ago was a home win for him.
Absolutely. Like, but what's it like performing away from home like that and touring?
I have mixed feelings about it these days. I've been touring for like 15 years now, and I've done like tons of touring, and I love it. And there's parts of it that I really, really love. I mean, I've got to see all over the country. I'm about to play all 50 states. I'm doing a thing to finish playing all 50 states. I've seen a bunch of the world.
So you're a completionist.
I am a completionist, and I mean the music has really taken me around. So it's amazing how many places I've gotten to see and visit. That being said, there's some places that I've seen enough of, and I don't feel the need to go back to. But I still need to go back there, and it can be grueling, you know? Like, it can be grueling to be on the road all the time.
What is that? When tennis players say the same thing, right? That, you know, Federer's, God bless him, has his net jets and his spouse. But for a lot of these players, it's waiting in line. It hurts, and my bags didn't arrive, yeah, and security pat down. When people say the road is grueling, for a musician, what does that mean?
The best way I can describe it is, like, most people take, you know, maybe one or two trips a year, and there's that feeling of like, okay, we leave the house, we take a cab, we get on the plane, we land, we get our rental car, and we get to the hotel and we're like exhausted, you know? Like, people know that feeling of like, I can't do anything right now. That was my whole day. Like, I'm not used to that. Like, that's all of that for me, and then do the show that night and like perform. So it's a lot of, I spend most of my time on the road just taking care of myself and eating healthy and not partying. And it's like a lot of regimented stuff. It's very un-rock and roll.
I was going to say, you tell stories from the road. They do not comport with our, this is not Hammer the Gods.
But I think it's stuff's more and more common. Like you were saying, you know, I think that's how most people make their money, is on the road. So I think, you know, you've got to be able to do the shows to get the money. And for me, it's, taking care of myself is worth it when I can go out and actually sing the way I want to sing, because nothing feels worse than like having to go out and, that's the stuff I understand more and more as I watch sports, is like, you know, someone who's playing at 90% or something, you can do most of the things, but you're not going to take risks. You know, my voice is like that. I'm not going to take risks. I'm going to sing the songs the way I need to be. I'm going to do whatever, but I'm not going to like push it and possibly blow something out. I like relating everything to sports.
No, that's what we do here. But you want to keep going with that theme?
No, that's whatever.
No, because I was thinking the physical. I have this pet theory about, you know, you have all this physical breakdown.
Okay,
it's a brutal sport now. It's, you know, they're playing it on asphalt. They're running around. But I think the travel has. Don't you feel like your immune system sort of lets you down? Your rhythms are off. I mean, I wonder if some of these illness and injuries aren't at least partially attributable to the fact that you're living this itinerant existence. I mean, you know, you take a red eye and you feel like crap, or you, I yeah. mean, you know, whatever. I go to Atlanta and like, you don't feel like you walk off the plane fresh and ready.
Definitely. I have a friend that says all travel is time travel. And I sort of like that idea that like, you get on a plane, you're like cheating the laws of physics. A human being is not meant to go this fast. And so you're like cheating time and space. And so you get off and you're like, not that time. I mean, like, you didn't do anything. You sat there all day, but like on a plane, but I always think of that stuff now to give myself a little bit of a break. But yeah, I mean, these guys are flying all over the place. The one thing I do think is a little easier for tennis players, assuming you make it far in a tournament, you stay in one place for a while. You know, you set up your camp and have a week or two there at least, which is a little easier for me. Usually we're out of town that night.
Do you ever see a city? When you're with Kelly Clarkson and you roll into...
Well, with Kelly Clarkson, we were playing a lot of these, like, you know, the A&P arena or whatever, stuff that's like way out in the middle of nowhere. So we'd park our tour bus and like we'd just be out there, and like I was fully catered, and like I wasn't seeing anything. We were 45 minutes from the city, but I try to see the city. But also, like, when I first started touring, I would be like, oh my gosh, I'm in Chicago, I gotta go to the museum and do this and blah blah and get a hot dog, and then like by the show I'd be exhausted and not be able to do the show. So now, unfortunately, you know, a lot of times I think people can relate to that stuff of like traveling for work is a different thing than traveling for pleasure. But that being said, I get to do a lot of amazing things, and food's really important to me. I base most of my day about like making sure I get a really good lunch, at least, you know. Like, it puts me in a really bad mood if we got to go to like a chain or something like that.
You should have told me. I would have taken you to lunch. that's pretty funny. I mean, it's funny too, because at least you sort of know when you perform.
Mm-hmm.
I always think one of the underrated tennis, again, everything's got to relate to tennis here. One of the underrated challenge, one of the underrated challenges for tennis players is, if you're first on, you're first on. For the rest of the players on the schedule, they don't know, is it going to rain? Is the match going to go three sets? Is the player going to retire?
I talk about this all the time. Like, it's crazy because I, you know, I'm assuming it's similar, but for me to start a show, I know I'm going to hit at what time. So then everything backs out from there. Like, most athletes are the same way. You know, you got a 7 o'clock tip off or whatever. But with tennis, it would be crazy. You do all your stretches and then the match goes long and you're still sitting there and you're like unstretched and you're, I don't know, I would have a really hard time with that.
What about being an individual performer? I mean, why did you choose, I assume you could, hey, it's the Killers and the Killers are great, or the Killer, and some people know, I'm blanking, who's it? Brendan Flowers, right?
Yeah.
Some people know the lead singer. Mm-hmm. Some people don't. Did you choose to be Eric Hutchinson and pick up, you know, like
well,
a keyboard
I was born
guy,
Eric
or
Hutchinson.
You? So you had no choice in that. Uh-huh. Do you make a conscious choice not to be Eric Hutchinson and the Heartbreakers?
Well, I actually just kind of created my band for the first time, Eric Hutchinson and the Believers, and we actually just recorded a new album all together. But in general, I didn't like being in bands because, I mean, so many bands, it's crazy. Like, the Rolling Stones just happened to all live near each other as, like, middle schoolers or whatever, you know? Like, you happen to know, like, a good enough drummer that can be in the band. But, like, where I was growing up outside D.C., for whatever reason, like, the guys I met were not good drummers. And I was like, being in a band sucks because, like, it sounds bad. And to this day, like, nothing ruins a music faster than a bad drummer for me, you know? Like,
you know all those drummer jokes.
Right? Yeah, right.
What do you call the guy who travels around with a band?
The drummer.
No, but I think that's an interesting point about a band, that you hear about these, I don't know, we were 16 years old and someone put a flyer up and here I am 40 years later and I'm still...
I mean, I think about that stuff a lot of like, imagine your best friends and when you were 14 and now the only way you can make money is to go out and play shows with them still, right, like when you're in your 60s, right. You know? And it's like, you hear all these like bad blood stories or whatever, but like... You would be so. There's got to be so much resentment there, and it's got to be like brothers and stuff. Like, I read the Keith Richards book. He barely made it sound like Mick Jagger was in the Rolling
right.
Stones.
But that's a great example, right?
Yeah.
Hey, we're teenagers. Hey, he plays guitar. Yeah. We'll try this out, and next thing you know, you're like, there's a financial relationship. There's an emotional relationship. And
right. It's a marriage and a brotherhood and all that stuff. You're married to your brother.
You see the Eagles documentary?
I have not. I don't have 4 hours lying around.
Put that
up. I'm lying. I have more than 4 hours, but I just haven't seen it.
It's no, but it's a lot of that. I mean, what a weird.
And they're very volatile people too.
Yeah. Well, the late Glenn Frey. But it gets to that point. I mean, what a weird.
But to go back to tennis, one thing that is tough about being like a solo singer songwriter is there's like when you win a championship. You know, or you win a major and you're out there. And I don't know why is no one allowed to come out of your box down onto the court to celebrate with you? You have to like cheer and look at them and just kind of like
I would
pump
say it's
your
the
fist.
Most bizarre thing. You've had this physical labor. Everybody else just sat there playing on their phones and cheering you on. And you're the one that's then got to hoist yourself
into the
third row.
It's exhausting. So like I feel like there's a little bit of that feeling though of like it's the glory and the loneliness all at once though, you know. It's like you know that you're the one that got yourself there or you got whatever happened, but also it's sometimes fun to be able to celebrate with other people.
It's funny because you say like John Isner gets asked, oh, you're 6'9", why didn't you play basketball? And his stock answer is, I love an individual sport. I love it. It's all on me, and if I screw up, it's my bad, and if I win, it's my glory. And other people say, oh, tennis, we've got to think of more team. We're losing kids because they like the team dynamic. Nobody wants to sit out there hitting balls by themselves. Kids are flocking to team sports because you've got this camaraderie. I mean, it's a little different with you, but I'm also thinking it must be really cool when you go to these far flung locations. They're not going to see the Laker. You know, it's not the team, and they're going to see you.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool to go somewhere that I've never been before and have people know the music. Is really exciting. But then also like the other side of that is like when no one's buying tickets, it's like just me, you know, like that's because like whatever, nobody wanted to see me in Tucson last time we were there. We had like 40 people or something, you know, and it's like my name up there.
Blame the publicist.
Yeah, right.
Isn't that what, that's what authors do. It's all about the marketing failures.
Yeah, you know, whatever. It's all good though. So, but like, yeah, there's that stuff of like, I'm out there and it's just me on the line. But that's what's fun about having touring with the band, because I toured for a lot of years by myself and that was lonely and boring and like, just not that fun really, the way that it is traveling along with the band. You know, it's actually like a, you know, a band of brothers. You get together, you eat meals, you sleep in the same places, and it's like summer camp kind of.
Is there anything competitive about being a touring musician?
I'd say so, yeah. I think there's friendly competition to like, you know, be the best person that night on the bill or whatever, for sure, you know. If you're secure with yourself, you put on a really good opening act because you know they're going to put on a really good show, and that's going to force you to have to do a good show as the headliner after that, you know. And so like I like that as the opener to like try to make it hard for you to go on afterwards.
That's like, you ever hear the, like, comedians say the same thing? Mm. Some of them say, like, I want the guy before me to kill it and get people in good spirits and drinks are flowing. And other guys are like, you know what? If the bar's low, I don't mind being like, all right, this is the differentiation right. between these amateurs and someone who does this at a higher level.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool to see. I mean, it's all, like, friendly, though. I don't want to, like, see anybody get hurt or something. But, you know, yeah, you want to feel like what you're doing is the most impressive or but that's not how fans look at it, you know? Like, fans aren't like, oh, that person did a better show than this person. They're like, this show was great. Everybody was good. Like, fans think of it as, like, if the opener is good,
it's all right.
That's a bonus. I think of it that way, you know? Like, I wouldn't be like, wow, they were actually better than the Stones. I'd be like, that's great. I have to sit through some crap.
But do you feel, you know how tennis players sometimes get, fair or not, they get lumped together, right? So you've got, I mean, never mind the big four, but you've got the Raonic, Nishikori, Dimitrov, Cilic generation, and you've got right. the young Americans. Do you feel like, and there's some, I think there's a little sort of alpha dog competition among them. I mean, I think these five, six young Americans that are all born within a year of each other, they know how the others are doing and who's mm-hmm. progressing and who isn't. You see yourself as a, You're checking, I don't know who's, Gavin yeah. DeGraw's album sales.
Gavin DeGraw. I think I did more when I was coming up and younger, and it's a great way to, like, torture yourself. If, like, you're at home, you want to, like, look at someone else's tour schedule and see what they're doing and get angry about it. Like, did that for many years. but now, in general, I'm trying to just do what feels authentic to me, and that's kind of taking me down a little bit of a different path, so...
So not so much touring. You're in Alaska, North Dakota, yeah. Hawaii, but not so much touring?
Not as much touring, for sure, as the last couple of years. I have a lot of other things I wanted to work on, and I felt like I need to take some time off the road and see what sort of takes up that space, because it's just all-consuming when I'm touring. And, you know, if you get home, then you got a few days or a week to, like, recharge, and I don't really feel like working then because I actually just want to, like, see my friends and do things. And then it can be challenging. So I set a goal of, like, I'm going to really limit myself on the shows I do and what's going to take that place. Well, I don't know. And then I, like, freaked out for a while and was like, well, what am I going to do? And how am I going to make a living? And what am I? What do I tell someone at a cocktail party? I'm a musician, but I don't do shows. And, like, I just kind of had, like, a freak out. And slowly, though, I've, like, started kind of putting things together, and I have a music listening game coming out called Songversations, which I did not bring a copy of you to,
damn it.
For
you
today.
Told me about it, though. It's a great idea.
Yeah, you can check it out online. It comes out in September. It's that's something I've been, like, working on for a long time.
Wait,
and, like,
tell the listenership what that is.
It's a music listening game for pretty much. It came out of a place of, like, I feel like I don't listen to music with anybody anymore, and maybe it's just because I'm older or something, but, like, I don't go to record stores, I don't sit around and just play music with friends, you know, like. And so it was like I started it just as I was like, hey, I invited some friends over and I was like, we're gonna listen to some music, and here's a category of, like, you have to pick a song out of, and everyone came over and we had a great time, we had some drinks, and then, like, pretty soon I had, like, a wait list of people, like, trying to get in, and I was like, I'm sorry, my apartment's not that big, I can't do that many people. And then my friend was like, why don't you make this into, like, an actual game that people can play even when you're not around?
Great idea.
Yeah, it's been really cool to develop it, so it's been exciting to, like, have it come together and get my first copy out of from the publisher, you know, all this stuff. But it's a satisfying feeling to feel like
that's your name on it.
Yeah,
that's,
but it's
tangible,
like,
product.
It's tangible. That's what it is for me.
They used to
yeah.
have these things. I think they were called CDs.
Mm-hmm.
That,
but I never, I don't know, because, like, I guess because I made my first couple albums myself. So, like, I made the CD, but, like, I had it, but, like, I printed it myself. I knew how it happened. But this was, like, through a publisher, and, like, it felt official in some way.
What, well, you said cocktail party. When someone, you're at a cocktail party here, and so, oh, you know, what do? I work for Morgan Stanley, and I... You know, I'm a dentist.
Yeah.
How do you introduce yourself? Please have
so,
I'm a rock star.
I've been doing
you,
this. I definitely say that.
What
I've
do
been
you say,
doing
seriously?
This for so Sing long, and I still don't have a good answer. It doesn't matter, because if you say, I say I'm a musician, and then they say, well, have I heard,
have
who
I
do you
heard
play
of you?
With? What do you do? And then I have to, like, prove it to them that I'm a musician or something. I don't have a good answer.
I think Rockstar.
I'm a rock star.
You need a business card to
Rockstar. What would you think of a person if you met them?
The question
I love is people will come up to me like when we're on the street or on tour or something. They can just tell that like, you know, we're a band or something. And then people will come up and be like, are you famous? And I'm always like, if you have to ask me, probably not.
No, but people, come on. I've seen people recognize you. But you also, I mean, what do you, have I heard of you? I don't know.
For a while, and then people are disappointed they haven't heard of me. So, like, for a while, I just tell people we were like Coldplay or something, and they just want to know. They just want to recognize the band name and go about their day and get to tell people they saw Coldplay.
I think to digress, I think fame is bottomlessly fascinating. I don't get it. I don't get our fixation with it. Humans were not meant to be famous.
Well, it's also subjective, you know, because that's the thing I find interesting is like when I travel abroad and, you know, do a TV show or something that I've never heard of, but people are like, this is a really big deal to do this, you know, and to like explain it. And it's just funny to like, you know, everything's rooted around our own life and then sort of expanded from there, you know? So it's like, for me, the number one thing I want to do is play SNL, but then like, they got to talk European people into it because they're like, what is this show? Why do I care? And why is it so late?
But I've seen you live. Yeah, you're a very fine musician, but clearly there's, I don't want to say an act and implies something disingenuous, but there's more than just playing the guitar.
Yeah.
You're very polished. You interact with the crowd. I'm thinking of, again, taking this back to tennis. It'd be great if you just go out there and bat balls around and I get to six games first. Goodbye. But there's a whole...
I'm the Jimmy Connors.
There's an image. You are. You just get out there and... No, but there's a whole... It always occurs to me with tennis, and you see this with players that have to adjust to this. There's a whole part of the job that has nothing to do with just hitting a ball.
Right.
And you can try to be a purist and you can try to be indifferent, but people notice what you wear and people notice that, hey, Stan didn't comb his hair today. And
it's one of the cool things I think about tennis is also like that the uniforms can change.
But there's a whole gestalt to being a tennis player, right? That has nothing to do with just forehands and backhands.
Who's like the least stylish winner like recently, you know? Like,
I'm going to put Andy Murray up there as the guy who
he is
don't
pretty
have,
unstylish. And he's got those huge shin guard things or ankles, whatever
it's like,
they are.
It's like the catcher. It's like the guy who then he walks to first base and he takes. No, but I think, you know, clearly someone has said to Andy Murray at one point, boy, if you had a little more energy in those press conferences, we could market you in a different way. And he basically has said, that's not who I am and I'm not willing to. We all put the concession fork in at different points, right?
The person I feel bad for is not bad, but I don't know. I find Djokovic a really like fascinating character, you know, and I think he's so great for the sport. And but one thing I find interesting is I feel like he's really had to like, because Roger and Rafa were there sort of doing the stately address and, you know, putting on the watch after the win and thanking the sponsors, and like I feel like they're so good at it and it doesn't come naturally to Novak, and he's not the kind of guy who would naturally have done that stuff. I feel like naturally he would have like been just kind of like, I mean, he was in the beginning kind of more of a kiss off, and like I think it'd just be so fun if he won and was just like, I want to thank myself, you know. I feel like that's what he wants to say, you know, like I won.
No, but instead it's gone totally in the other direction, where John McEnroe can liken you to Tiger Woods and your response is, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. Yeah. I've always had a good relationship with John. I don't take it personally. And you want to say like, dude, you can't possibly believe that. I get it. We all have decisions about candor and there's a line. But no, but I wonder with you, that's really interesting about Joe. We can go back to Djokovic. But I wonder with you, how much did you have to grow into, oh shit, now that I've achieved a certain level, this is more than just writing songs and playing. I need to really think about how I'm interacting with my audience.
And I still think some of that stuff, you know, it just depends. Like, a big part of it was pretty early on. I started, like, I was just wearing jeans and a t-shirt or whatever on stage. And now, like, I perform in suits. I have, like, a uniform. I have, you know, something that feels like you're getting into the spirit, your work clothes. One of my managers a long time ago said, like, you need to look better than your audience. Like, someone should be able to spot you and know that you're going on stage. And I kind of like that idea. But it doesn't have to be like I'm wearing a tuxedo. It could just be like, well, if all my fans wear jeans, I better have like the best jeans on or something. Like, I don't wear jeans, but so that's why I went with a suit. But I sort of like this idea of like dressing up for the occasion and like treating it like it matters to you. And
was that hard?
Took me a minute to get used to, but now I like it. I like it a lot, actually.
The No, it's interesting because I always feel like with tennis players, that's always something you've got to grow into. And some players do it naturally, and others really struggle to what is my – I know I'm an athlete, and I know that when I serve to the deuce court, I'm going wide. But now you're asking me exactly what you said. Now I've got to remember to put on my stupid watch before the trophy presentation. Yeah. And when I get asked this in the press conference, I have to say that. And when I post on social media, I have to give this image.
But I also think, like, more and more I'm thinking of athletes as like child stars, where like these are people that didn't have normal childhoods and were doing this thing from very early on and were working. And a lot of times the family like quits their jobs to start like supporting this thing. And this person's now in charge of, you know, funding the family. And I don't know. To me, it would be very possible to like talk to a tennis player who's been playing tennis all his life, and he doesn't have anything else to talk about because tennis is his life, you know. Right. And that's definitely happened for me at points with music, which is dangerous because then you have nothing to write about, you know. So like a big thing for me is like going out and living life and getting things to like happen so that I can think
right.
about them.
No, it's the old. It's a little bit like, you ever hear this story about Adam Sandler?
I don't know.
He used to be a great observational comic, and he was funny, and he would go to bars, and all of a sudden he's getting $20 million a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly he's in this gated community, and he has a staff, and he's not making jokes about the TSA pat-down or the
right.
scanner at the supermarket or whatever sort of normal people go through. So he makes it this irony where you make your bones as a man of the people, and then suddenly you lose your edge when you start living.
Although I find like Seinfeld is still pretty good at that. He's found a way to like still be able to relate to you even though he could buy you.
I was going to say, he has a house in the Hamptons.
I love Seinfeld, but I find him so like, I find him so inspirational, you know. But like, also I like the way he treats fame. He's kind of like, why wouldn't I go outside and just do something? Someone's going to come up to me, fine, I'll say hi and then keep moving. But like, he's good about like living his life
I can tell. So you're a comedian and you can sort of decide to tour and not to tour. With an athlete, it's tougher, right? I mean, you're Tommy Robredo. I don't know. Let's pick out a name. Schiavone. They've all got to figure out when to quit.
But this I find really interesting, what's going on now, and if we're going to start to see a big trend with, you know, Federer took the year off. Djokovic is doing it now. I wanted to send you a picture, too. I didn't get it in time. But so the buses have, like, U.S. Open posters, and they say, you in? And it's got all these different players, and then one of them's Novak, and it's like, actually a question.
Are you in?
No, I'm not.
Did you not read my release last week?
But I'm seeing this thing now. It's like, I wonder if this is going to be more, it's really the only sport where you can actually just say, I'm going to take off blank amount of time. I guess golf, but like, it's sort of like resting your starters, right? In basketball
exactly.
or something.
Exactly. You want me to play 82 games? All right. But just so you know, I'm going to play only 28 minutes in April, forget
right.
it, and back-to-back, so I'm only going to play the first game.
I mean, it makes total sense to me if you are feeling burned out, especially if you're getting older, that like it's really about the majors and
right.
less and less about the ranking and less about anything but winning, you know? So it's like, why would I go play anything I can't win?
Right. Or why
would
I?
But I wonder, is Andy Roddick kicking himself right now? Is he like, I should have just been skipping the clay season and then like crushing Australian Open every year and like, I don't know.
Because the answer is yes, I think. we can ask him that. I think there are a lot of players who are thinking about how they handled their career and said, hey, if I knew that I could really pare things down or take half mm-hmm. a year off and I would get those years on the back end, I think I would have mapped things out.
But I'm interested. I feel like there'll be a retaliation because, everything's set up and the point system is set up so that you have to keep playing to maintain your ranking. But if slowly people are like, I don't care about the ranking, I just want to win. I mean, that's easy for like the sort
yeah,
of...
Yeah, but I think tennis's attitude is, boy, if we can get Federer into his late 30s, but maybe he only plays, I mean, he's actually playing Montreal, but if he's only playing the Canadian Open every other year,
right.
but we can get those years so he can, you know, winning majors at age 35, 36, I'll make that deal.
I agree, and ideally you would see some other people rise outside of the top four, the big four, who are like winning in those other times. You know, actually, to me, it would be cool if like this person's not going to play, so now maybe Milos Raonic is going to, yeah. Somebody else is
really
going to come on.
All right, so you know, one of my favorite stories is how we met. You want me
yes,
to tell it?
Sure.
This is our segue portion of today's show. Jamie, you ever know the story how we met?
No.
So I'll pretend to tell you, and everyone can. This is my favorite stories. 2012 Olympics, NBC, every sport had their own stylist that taught people like me who make their living writing, you know, not to wear vertical stripes and horizontal stripes. There was a nice woman named Jill who, it turned out, lived quite close to me here. And I said, did you pick tennis or did they just assign it to you randomly? And she goes, no, it was random. And I'm so lucky because I love tennis and especially I love Roger Federer. I'm crazy about Roger Federer. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then she's like, I'm so crazy about Roger Federer that my husband, I think you guys were married then.
When
did you guys get married?
We were married.
My husband wrote a song about Roger Federer and how much I love him. I'll send you a video of it. And I'm thinking, oh boy, seen this one before. So I figured, I had to open this link because I was going to see this woman and I didn't want to like have to play dumb if she said, did you see the video? And I'm expecting, a guy on a futon with a $50 acoustic guitar writing about his wife and Roger Federer. So I click on the link. And it's Letterman saying, our next guest is Warner Brothers recording artist, Eric Hutchins. That's how you ought to introduce yourself, by the way. Warner Brothers recording artist. Our next guest is, and so I thought this, my boyfriend writing a song was going to be some wacky home video on her phone. And it
she
was
picked a good link to send. That's a good one.
It's a good link. It was you playing this song on Letterman about how much your wife, Jill. Otherwise, I would say, fellow Midwesterner, thoroughly measured, reasonable human being has a special relationship with Roger Federer.
She's highly, she's just in love with him. But what's interesting is
back up though, because I don't think, it's not
obsessed,
sexual.
Not
but it's,
sexual.
I was going to say, it's
she's so in love with him and like obsessed with him so much that she says like, oh, I would never want to be with him. I would never want to damage his family or break his family up or anything like that.
No,
she's
it's
like,
just aesthetic.
She tells a story she was watching. I think it was the 2008 or something. What was the final with Nadal, Wimbledon? Literally wrote the book about it.
6-7-8. Nadal won the one in 8.
She tells a story like she saw him randomly and like a piece of her heart just like opened up. She had no idea who he was while he was winning like all those years and all those majors. And then she saw him and she like happened to get in at this really odd time where like he wasn't winning. So like out of his 19 majors, she's seen him win 3 of them.
Live
as a fan,
there,
just as a fan, you know, like so, like it's I don't know. I've been trying to think of what it's like liking the Duke Blue Devils or the Yankees. It's like so, it's all the pressure of being a top seed, but then like he's compared to like how much all the other Big Four have won during this time. Like it's been a lot of crushing losses. We've seen several of them in person, and
but doesn't that add texture to this whole?
I think
story?
So. This year has been amazing.
I mean, he went 5 years without a major.
Yes,
almost.
And this year's been amazing. And my wife was saying the whole time, like, oh, if he gets into the final of Wimbledon, I'm flying there. I was like, okay. She was saying this for like months. And then like we're watching the last week and like it's starting to come together. And I'm like, okay. And we're like, we're with my family. And everyone's like, are you booking this ticket on Friday if he wins? And she's like, yes. So like he wins Friday morning. We're in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. She books a flight that afternoon. Goes to sleep at like 10 o'clock, wakes up at 2 in the morning, drives 3.5 hours on her own to the D.C. airport, flies out of D.C. airport without a ticket to Wimbledon, lands in England.
Without a ticket to center court.
Yes, ticket. Sorry, without a ticket to see the match. But she's like, I'm just going to get one. And I knew she was. Like, I had no doubt. And so she lands and she gets a text from her friend Renee Stubbs, who says, you're very lucky, but I put my name in randomly in like a lottery and I got a ticket, and so you've got a ticket. And so she's like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And she starts crying on the plane. And then the next day she goes, and there actually ended up being another ticket. So she brought her like lifelong friend who she was staying with in London. And then they get there and they're sitting like 3 rows behind Pippa Middleton and the Rogers family. And she's texting with me. We're watching it on TV back. I'm still in Delaware watching this on television with my family. And she's like sitting, like she's in all these shots because she's right behind Mirka and everybody. So like they keep getting these reaction shots. And she said it was the best day of her life. And I found it really inspiring, honestly. Like it's kind of changed my opinion.
Are you okay? Where do you, I mean, again, I want to differentiate. This is strictly aesthetic. I mean, clearly there's a connection there. This is not, I love Roger Federer, I want to marry. I mean, this is
yeah,
she wouldn't aesthetic connection.
She wouldn't go for a tennis player because to them, love means nothing.
I've heard that. I've seen that bumper sticker at my local racquet club. No, but what is it? Because what is it like? And this is my segue. I'm teeing you up here. Rather than tell us what it's like having a spouse who's a big Roger Federer fan.
Yeah.
Would you like to give us a little vocal rendition of that?
Sure. Well, I'll do a quick intro of, so like, as I said, we went through a lot of losing years and we got to see him lose in the Dubai final. I had a show there and we went to go see him lose to Djokovic in Dubai. We've seen him lose at the US Open. We've seen him lose all over the place, but we've seen him lose on vacation and at home a lot too. So like, the thing I always found like funny / heartbreaking was that like, this guy would just lose some random match and then it's like ruins my weekend because like my wife doesn't want to go outside. Like it's like you know, guys in their college football team or something, you know, like he loses on a Friday and our weekend is ruined. So like I just thought it was funny that this guy is out there like doing That's all really this, it's affecting me, and I'm in this weird love triangle.
I thought LSU was going to choke.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Hell? Can we just go out?
Yeah, no. So like, I found like I was kind of in this weird love triangle with Roger, and I sort of just wrote this song as a joke for her one day, and then I played it for Jill, and she really liked it, and then she started telling me it should go on the album. I was like, I don't know about that. And I actually started liking it, and so I did put it on the album, and I played it on Letterman, and I played it for some friends, and I was like, this is funny, right? And they're like, this is sad, Eric. And I was like, I know, but like she just really loves him. She's not that sad. They're like, no, it's sad for you, Eric. So I'm going to play the song for you. It's called Watching You Watch Him. And
it's about your wife.
Roger Federer. It's about, yeah, my wife watching Roger Federer.
Your first musical guest.
Is this going to work sound-wise here?
You're the rock star.
I love you from the bottom of my heart. That's not gonna change, but things look grim when I'm watching you watch him. I give you the best a man can hope to give, but I'm not feeling brave, chances are slim when I'm watching you watch him. Oh, what is left to learn when he would let you crash and burn? He never gives attention, but you still yearn. Where do I fit in when I'm watching you watch him? God only knows why I still wait around, except I hate to see you cry. And I need you, but there are things I cannot do, and I want you. When he's playing all his games, and it gets hard to tell who's a victim, when I'm watching you watch him. Oh, what is left to learn when he would let you crash and burn? He never gives attention, but you still yearn. Where do I fit in when I'm watching you watch him? God only knows why I still wait around, except I hate to see you cry. And I need you, but there are things I cannot do. And I love you like a broken record plays, but I'm a window pane, a phantom limb, when I'm watching you watch him. When I'm watching you watch him.
watching you watch him. Hey, 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 hey.
There are only two of us here.
Yeah.
That's rousing applause.
Rousing applause. We'll put that in later.
Jamie, we could put we can do a sound file for that. That's great. That's fun, right?
Yeah, I've talked about that stuff on stage and too. So like when Roger is playing, I get lots of like live tweeting going on from people, and you know, sort of
from your fans
checking
saying,
in, or like you know, random people, how's Jill doing? So
I noticed you didn't rhyme Vavrinka once in there.
I know. Have you seen this Avion commercial that's like with Vavrinka like dressed in disguise and that he's playing tennis? Have you seen this one? And like he does the big reveal that they're actually playing with Stan, and like nobody knows who he is. It's terrible.
One of our colleagues here, Rohan Nadkarni, who I'm looking at right now, that gentleman behind you, wrote for Deadspin before he came here. It's the single best description of Stan Wawrinka, which is he looks like the guy who just got up in time for the all-you-can-eat buffet at the Hampton Inn.
I love Stan. I love Stan.
No, honestly, there are very few bad apples.
But he's a good example. Stan's a good example of someone who like doesn't quite have like the polish and the clothes and like the. He's just a great tennis player.
Yeah, I go out there and I bat balls. You think I'm going to start thinking about what sponsors I need to thank in what order? Hey, thanks. That was great.
Thank you.
That was awesome.
Thanks for having me.
What do you got the rest of the summer?
I'm doing my last couple shows. In all 50 states, I'm playing. I don't know when this is going out, but I'm playing North Dakota, South Dakota. Where else? Wyoming and
Alaska
Hawaii.
You did during the French Open.
I did Alaska, yeah. So I'm playing the last five states I never played. So if you live near those places, you want to make a road trip, you want to come out and see me, come on out. You can check me out, erichutchinson.com.
U.S. Open pick. We'll end there. What do you got? We're a month out.
I mean, I'm not going to bet against Roger.
I was gonna say,
at this point.
We think we see a third major of 2017. For the
we're going to be in California, and we're like booking a red eye to come back for the final, just in case. But I don't know,
Renee Stubbs, you've been warned.
I don't know who. I feel like I'm excited about these younger group of guys that are like Zverev. I feel like obviously taking this big step forward. I feel like theme or team. I never
team.
Know. Team. The theme is team.
There you go.
I feel like he's kind of left Goffin in the dust. Like I feel like I could never keep them straight for a while, and now like, team's the one who's winning all the time. I feel like one of these guys is going to win one of these days, Milos, but I haven't seen anything yet. So it'd be fun, a little Kyrgios in the final maybe.
I think rock and roll dreamer you are.
Kyrgios takes a lot of time off, but not on purpose.
That was great. Was that fun?
Yeah, it was awesome. Thank you for having
me. A little different,
right? Yeah, this was great.
Jamie, we have fun?
That's great.
All right, that does it for this week. A little different. That is our first ever musical guest. These things are always better, I think. Would you not agree, Jamie, when the guests are in person? Makes the conversation flow a little easier. But anyway, thanks to Eric. That was good of him to stop by. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I don't know if there are any other Roger Federer songs making the ranks. I know, guess who sampled Elena Dementieva's name? We'll look that one up later. That's trivia for next week. That is about the only other time I can think of a song you'll hear on the radio has tennis reference. So thanks to Eric. Thanks, as always, to Jamie, our trusty producer. We will have another guest next week. But again, feel free to keep your suggestions coming. I put the asterisk that current players can be a bit tricky, especially in weeks when they play just because of the tennis schedule. But that should not deter you. Thanks for listening, everyone. You can listen to this on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever fine podcasts are sold. Feel free. What do they always say? What does Deitch always say? Feel free to leave a comment in the comments section. I feel like I'm just cutting and pasting there. All right. Thanks, everyone. That was fun. We'll do it again next week. Take care.